Welcome, everybody, to Elwood City Limits, the Episodic Arthur podcast. It's Will Young here, along with my co-host, Lucas Mancini. And, yeah, I'm not doing so much of the, you know, rambling along intro because this is a busy episode. We have a lot to talk about. So I want to get right into it real quickly. But I also want to be able to say to you, Lucas, happy belated Lucas Mancini Day from myself and from all of us.
Thank you, Will. And, you know, it goes without saying that the best birthday gift of all is all you listeners out there in Radioland who tune in week in and week out to talk about everybody's favorite animated aardvark.
True that. And it's you got quite a few lovely messages on our social media and through email. So thank you. Thank you from me as well to everybody sending their love to you and even a meme or two. Really appreciated that. And it's just nice to be able to recognize Lucas at this time every year during Aquarius season.
We love the meme, folks. We love it. We love the memes.
I mean, there has to have been a Trump impression at some point in the 7 years we've been doing this.
Of course, we've
basically been podcasting since the beginning of the Trump presidency, so it has to have happened.
It's yeah. I wonder if he's a listener. No, I'm just joking.
All right. So first things first, we have a couple of emails, and I'd like to get to those over at elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com. Our first one comes from Emily, who says, "Hello, Will, Lucas, and Mike. I just wanted to email in to say I've been loving your Arthur podcast. I started listening to you guys in early 2023. I've especially enjoyed having your podcast on in the background because it analyzes a cartoon, which I feel is related to the work I do in college, which is mostly drawing comics, as I'm studying for a degree in comics and illustration. So always nice to have your podcast about art slash animation on in the background while I make my silly cartoons. Anyway, when I started listening, I made a rule for myself that I'd listen to your whole backlog before emailing in, so as you can probably guess, that day has finally come. After a year of listening to your podcast whenever I made art, I finally finished the backlog, and I'm all caught up to write this email. More on the topic of Arthur, something I want to mention is my close connections to Arthur. First, I'm from the Boston, Massachusetts area. That's where the filming is done for most of the Word From Us Kids segment. This means anytime they name-dropped a location in Massachusetts on those segments, it's always a wide-eyed, shocked reaction from me, because I know exactly what they're talking about and have likely visited the town they're filming in. Sadly, though, I've never been on one of those segments. So close, but yet so far. Adding to this lore, though, is something I found out this summer that made my jaw drop. I was reading an old Arthur book that I had from childhood, and in the back of the book, there was a note about Mark Brown that mentioned that he currently lived in Hingham, Massachusetts. I had to resist the urge to scream reading that because I live in a town that borders Hingham, Massachusetts, meaning for most of my life, I've loved Arthur and lived in the town right next to Mark Brown and never knew it until recently. Now, don't get too excited because I've never had a casual run-in with Mark Brown or anything, but doing a little digging on the internet, I found he no longer lives in Hingham, but rather moved to Manhattan once Arthur ended. This brings me to my second locational tie-in with Mark Brown. Remember how I said I was studying to be an artist in college? Well, where do I happen to be studying to get my art degree? None other than a college in Manhattan, New York. So once again, without even knowing it, I find myself staying in the current living location of none other than Mark Brown. This is something I didn't know until I saw online that he was doing a book signing in New York. The same book signing another one of your listeners mentioned going to recently.
Now, have we seen this guy and Mark Brown in the same room?
Emily, you mean?
I mean, guy, you know, colloquially, the listeners at large. But yeah, have we seen Emily and Mark Brown in the same room? How, you know, this could be like a Spider-Man kind of scenario.
Anybody can be Mark Brown. You can be Mark Brown. I was at the very same book signing, and it's where I picked up my copy of his final Arthur book and got it signed. I finally met the man in person this year. Anyway, that's a story I wanted to share, my journey living in the heart of a World From Us Kids segment and Mark Brown's hometown. P.S. to Lucas specifically, I swear you and I share brain cells because I'm also awful at math, have ADHD and never failed to laugh at your sense of humor. Lucas, I didn't realize you'd gotten a diagnosis.
I do not have an ADHD diagnosis.
I was gonna say, like,
but I don't know. I feel like to use the Zoomer parlance, perhaps I'm coded, Will. Perhaps this listener knows something I don't.
My biggest laugh by far was the time Will asked you if you did the math along with the kids on the show, and your immediate reaction was something along the lines of screaming, "Oh, hell no," into the mic. Thanks for keeping me entertained while I make my silly drawings. That's from Emily. They're also at @drawing_fandom. That's fandom with an E on the end if you want to check them out. Thank you, Emily. Next one is from Funith. That point you guys made about kids' media today being too sanded down really hits home. Heck, even stuff like Adventures from the Book of Virtues in the 90s didn't shy away from heavy subjects like death on the battlefield, severed heads, racism, and slavery, and that was on PBS. But modern Western media would rather act like there is no war in Ba Sing Se and project that they can't handle those heavy subjects while acting like they speak for audiences. It's no wonder anime trounces Western animation. Shonen is the most popular, and it's stuff that's meant for kids over there, but people in the West mistake it for being for adults because they can't conceive of kids' cartoons ever being on that level, not even when Avatar aired. So, Lucas, when we were talking about, you know, the kind of, I suppose, softening of kids' cartoons, in a sense. It's a little bit more complex than that a couple of episodes ago. I think that resonated with quite a few of our listeners.
Well, and I think this listener would do well to listen to our most recent Patreon episode about The Amazing World of Gumball, because I think that there's a little bit of that, you know, it's not quite the same thing, yet it's a comedy. There's a little bit of that adult sensibility in there. We got at least one joke where it's implied that there's like a dead baby or something. And so if you want to hear about how that could have possibly come up in Gumball, you're gonna have to subscribe to that Patreon episode. So I don't know if this is necessarily the case. I'm sure Bluey at some point deals with PTSD from war. But I actually do largely
infertility
agree.
I know that for certain.
I actually do largely agree with this listener's sentiment. And, you know, I think I've talked about this before, about when I was 13, what originally drew me to anime was that, you know, it was a serialized show, and there was, the characters would grow and change, unlike children's cartoons, and also, you know, there was blood and fighting and death, which I wasn't used to, and there was permanence to the death as well, something I wasn't used to in kids' shows. So it makes sense to me that this listener had the kind of, has the same reaction, though I wouldn't cast it with such a broad brush. There are some, like I said, Gumball, Bluey, kind of in jest, but also kind of truly Bluey's pretty punching above its weight, I think, in seriousness. There are a few exceptions.
Next one is from Robin. Hello, Will and Lucas and Mike. As they say in the biz, long time, first time. My friend Jackie and I actually discovered your podcast in the spring of 2020 when we wanted to start our own Arthur podcast, but then we discovered one already existed. For the record, our podcast was going to be called When You Get Caught Between the Moon and Elwood City, a double parody of the show Arthur, and of course, the lovely piece of cinema that is the movie Arthur. I'm also caught up with the back catalog, as I've been listening over the past 4 years, and there are so many things I've learned about you two. For example, Lucas's hatred of the Cavs. As a Clevelander and having worked in the town LeBron is from, how very dare you?
Listen, and I am a, you have to respect LeBron, you know. Will, to put this into parlance you would understand, you know,
thank
LeBron
you.
Has almost a John Cena-esque kind of shadow he casts, especially current day John Cena, where, you know, you kind of have to love him because he's a legend. The problem is, you folks in Cleveland, first of all, you had your championships, you had your big celebration with LeBron, so you're no longer a punching bag. Okay, so you can enjoy that, rest on your laurels. Second of all, I had to watch the Cleveland Cavaliers knock the Raptors out of the playoffs year in and year out, okay? So it is I who am the victim, okay? I'm sorry that you had the best player, you know, in the world and in a generation. My bad. I'll go a little bit easier on you folks in Cleveland, Ohio. But no, of course I respect LeBron. If you love basketball, how can you not? But I will never forgive the Cleveland Cavaliers for how they've embarrassed my dear Raptors year in and year out.
And this is back to the email. The ongoing discussions of where Elwood City is. We were told as Cleveland youths that Elwood City is based on nearby Erie, Pennsylvania, as that is where Mark Brown is from, so that's at least gospel to me. Fun fact, Mark Brown attended the Cleveland Institute of Art next door to where my Arthur buddy Jackie and I met while working at the Cleveland History Center in the University Circle neighborhood. Maybe Jackie and I are the female version of Will and Lucas. We both met at work and have 4 to 5 years between us. And love Arthur. Arthur was a huge part of my early TV life. I attached a picture of my cousin Jenny and I at Tower City in Cleveland circa 1996 when we got to meet the legend himself. Cool picture. Thank you for doing that. I also grew up playing Arthur's Reading Race 10,000 times a day, and Jackie and I have even played an Arthur Goes to the Library memory game as adults to reminisce on the days of yore. Anyways, thanks for a great and long-lasting show that keeps me company at the gym and while I'm doing stuff around my house. I actually just joined the Patreon as a present for me for getting a cool new job. Congratulations. And so I could listen to the Homestar Runner episode. Teen Girl Squad was a pivotal part of my internet growing up. Listening to you guys over the last 4 years and catching up on the back catalog has been oodles of fun. That's all I got for now. Live long and prosper. That's from Robin. Sorry, I shouldn't excise this. To quote the best TV theme song, it's been a long road getting from there to here. P.S. As a Trekkie, I gotta know each of your favorite Star Trek captains. Mine is Captain Benjamin Sisko. I guess mine's Picard. It's kind of a boring answer, but I've only really watched two of the series, and it's the one with Kirk and the one with Picard. So, yeah, Picard. Lucas?
I'm also boring. You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about doing a Star Trek The Next Generation rewatch. I've never been much of a big Trekkie besides, you know, I feel like that's the classic show you watch with your dad growing up. Mm-hmm. And that's where most of my Star Trek The Next Generation viewing has been. However, I've been thinking about returning to it. Just I don't have a lot of free time. So I would be lying if I said it was anyone other than Picard.
And those are long episodes and long seasons, so it is quite a bit of a time commitment. My wife loves Star Trek, though, so she's, I think she's actually more of a Kirk person. I thought that she might be, I think she likes Picard, she likes Patrick Stewart, but I think she gravitates toward Kirk a little bit more. And finally, we have one here from KDP. Dear Will and Lucas, when your next episode airs, it will be March. So, happy March. Recently, I watched Prunella's Special Edition, the episode where Prunella gets a Braille copy of Henry Screever and meets Marina. I was surprised by the word from us kids that followed. The segment features Connor, the kid who creates the character of Lydia. In the segment, he hangs out with Mark Brown and visits a wheelchair basketball team. Considering that Lydia was introduced in 2010 in the episode The Wheel Deal, and Prunella's Special Edition aired in 2001, the placement of this word from us kids felt weird. I looked it up, and the episode with Prunella's Special Edition was altered in the 2010s to include this segment instead of a segment featuring kids attending a book signing. I find it interesting that they made this choice instead of airing Connor's segment after The Wheel Deal. That episode is instead followed by a segment that features a girl who uses a wheelchair, so I can also see why they chose to go in that direction. The episode with the segment is on Internet Archive. If you're interested in watching it, happy belated Lucas Mancini Day. And thank you, Katie, and everybody who emailed us this week for the start of our newest season. ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email or correspondence. And as Lucas said, we continue on with our Patreon, and our latest offering is the newest episode of ECL Origins, where we talk about a show that is very, speaking of Lucas pilled, we are talking about The Amazing World of Gumball. And it was a really fun episode. I was really glad to finally be able to get to experience this, and I feel like I had a good guiding hand through it with Lucas. So definitely check that one out. There's obviously a preview on the free feed of the full episode, and the full one is now available. Patrons, if you haven't checked it out yet, see that you do, because it's a good one. And speaking of patrons, we want to make sure to thank our patrons as well. So that would be people like Leanne S. and Ross Ward. Thank you to Rachel Pearson and Ursula Cat. Thank you to EJ Acra and Aurora Borealis. Thank you to Katie and RPG Fiend. Thank you to Mamata and Alex. Thank you to the Flying Sparks 32. And we have some new ones that I'm going to thank in sequence here. So I want to say thank you to Peppy Rue, Aaron L., Ashmita, Jenna / Jen, Matthew Garcia, and Robin Marks, one of the people who emailed us today. That's patreon.com/ Elwood City Limits if you want to get on the fun. Okay, I've been so excited to talk about this for the past couple of weeks because not only are we starting a new season of Arthur, but this is a new era of the show. And as always, I have a collection of notes here before we get into the episode itself, and it's pretty considerable, and there's some really cool stuff that I want to touch on here. And as always, I want to thank Peebs, who is one of our patrons, but also a great friend to the show, for help with research on this one. So, we're talking about Arthur Season 20. It aired in North America from October 2016 to June 2017. Peeves tells me this is the second last production deal for the show, so this season and Season 21 were produced at the same time. What exactly that means, we're going to get into probably later this year. There is a change in animation studios, which is one of the first things you will notice when watching along with us. So, previously, in the past couple of seasons, we had Nine Story Media Group animating things. This time, from season 20 onward, we're switching to Oasis Animation. Oasis is a Montreal-based animation studio, and chances are you've seen their animation in something. So they're known for Caillou, the newer Caillou cartoon, 16, Curious George, and other stuff including like F is for Family and Paradise PD. So they have a very broad range. In fact, now that I think about it, Lucas, I think it was, I want to say 2022, maybe 2021, when Oasis animation workers went on strike.
Right, right. I remember that.
So along with this change in animation studios, we're also changing the tools to animate. The last couple of seasons, we've been using Adobe Flash, and we, of course, that has been a big talking point. We are now moving to Toon Boom Harmony, and they are, quote, the worldwide standard for 2D animation productions. If you've never heard of it before, Toon Boom Animation, it's a company that was also founded in Montreal in 1994. They created Toon Boom Harmony and other animation and production softwares. And I'm going to say better than chances are, you have seen something that Toon Boom Harmony has been used in. Everything from Disney movies and major studio animated films to YouTube productions. It, like, I didn't even write down any examples. It's just like there's far too many. Toon Boom is one of the go-to digital animation programs that is used in the animation industry today.
Which, you know, it's an important lesson for me and you, Will, because I think that us as laymen make the mistake that people often make where you blame the tool or even the individual using the tool rather than the circumstances that lead to something looking the way that it looks. So right. A classic example is when people say, this video game looks like it was made with Unity, right?
Yes, yeah.
It's a classic kind of nonsense statement, right? Because just because something is made in Unity doesn't mean it has to look a certain way. And I'm currently on the Toon Boom website, and I'm seeing examples, you know, that don't look like kind of a puppet show, as like we like to call it, a paper puppet show, when yes. we're kind of being a little bit flippant about modern Arthur. And, you know, the same could be said actually for Flash. There was a lot of talk of the Flash era, how shows look worse now because they use Flash. And when you talk about all the things that use Toon Boom, It's not necessarily the fault of the tool. And I also probably don't place the blame at Oasis Animation. Like I said, I think the more I've learned about animation, the more I've learned that, you know, if given the resources to do so, people want stuff to look as good as they can possibly make it. And often when stuff doesn't look good, it's because of factors outside of their control, upper management, what have you. That being said, and I hope, you know, the folks at Oasis came out of that strike getting paid as much as possible.
Exactly, yes.
That being said, it is no surprise that the current season of Arthur is made by the folks who made Paradise PD or F is for Family. Because those shows, I gotta say it, Will, I gotta speak truth to power, those shows look like glop. They look really bad. Glippy glop. That's like the you know... Once we're getting into sub Family Guy animation, right? Like, you're like, wow, if this looked a lot better, it would look like Family Guy. That's where you know you've kind of taken a dark turn at some point.
So I do want to get into a bit more of a detailed discussion about the new animation, but I'll save that for the very beginning of when we talk about the episode. So that's what we're dealing with. That's why the show looks so different all of a sudden. There's a lot of changes going on, including changes to the cast, because we are once again recasting DW and Arthur. Stepping into the role of DW is Christian DiStefano, who is replacing Andrew Dayton. DiStefano actually is an Arthur actor. He previously voiced James in seasons 18 and 19. He also had roles on Paw Patrol, Odd Squad, and the Chucky TV series. So he's still a working actor, and I do believe he was interviewed for the Finding DW podcast made by friend of the show, Jason Schwimmer. So if you haven't listened to Finding DW, check that out. But now you have another episode that you can also check out and be a little bit more informed on what Christian DiStefano sounded like as a kid. And now playing Arthur is Jacob Urso-Marzo, who is replacing William Healy. This was Jacob's first big role, and he would go on to be in productions like PJ Masks and With an E, the Netflix series, and a lot of assorted voice roles. Two roles that we don't hear in this episode are the Tibble twins, and they have been recast. So Samuel Ferracci and Devin Cohen are the new voices of Timmy and Tommy, respectively. Samuel Ferracci has had several guest spots on Canadian productions. He's done voice work as well, including Super Y, which we covered on For the Kids on our Patreon. And he was the voice of Rocky on Paw Patrol. Similarly, Devin Cohen has been a voice on Paw Patrol. He's the voice of Rubble. And he's the voice of he has voiced Daniel Tiger from Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. So we've got the For the Kids connection with the Tibble twins and the Paw Patrol connection. These kids, I think they're a bit more grown up now, but man, voice acting vets at a young age. Another big change that we are going to be seeing is that this marks the beginning of shortened seasons. So for the longest time, Arthur seasons have routinely been 10 episodes long. Now, it's going to be 7 episodes long. This season and season 21 are 7 episodes, and it will only get shorter from there. So we will be going through these at a little bit of a quicker clip. And it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment. So far, you know, with 7 episodes, I was thinking, like, is that going to change the way that we typically do the season recaps? I think, I'm going to see if we can find 5 episodes that we like in the... Because those aren't just episodes, those are like parts. So really, we have like 14 to choose from.
True.
When we get down to the really short seasons, we'll probably have to make those...
Top 3.
Best list. Yeah, top 3 probably. But for now, we'll stick with top 5. It's just going to be weird to have a bit of a shorter Arthur season. What is returning is the 1-hour specials. After a 15-year absence from Arthur, It's Only Rock and Roll, we're starting the 1-hour specials again this season. So we get DW and the Beastly Birthday and Arthur and the Haunted Treehouse. And keen ECL listeners will know that you can listen to full-length commentaries on both of those by going to our free feed and our YouTube channel. You can just search for those on YouTube or look for those in your podcast app. And yeah, full-length commentaries. I will say those were made a couple of years ago, and it was before we started seasons with LaDonna and Bud in them. So our... biases are not on display there. We're a little bit... so keep that in mind, but we still had a lot of fun recording
those. I bet it's pretty funny to go back and listen to those, because I bet we're like, I don't know about these LaDonna and Bud characters. Maybe we'll, when we get more from them, we'll like them. And then it's like how wrong we were.
Yes. See how we are when we're uninformed and then come back and be like, oh, no, it didn't quite happen the way we thought it would. Something also, now, I must admit, I didn't see this in this episode because I kind of forgot to look out for it. Apparently, you can see Mark Brown as an animated background character in this season and going forward. So if you're familiar with what the caricature of Mark Brown looks like, keep your eyes open as we continue watching.
Is it supposed to be like a running gag? Like, is it like the soccer ball where it's in every episode?
I think it's just that, like, among the cadre of background characters that they have, he's just going to be part of the, like, just a little shout out as we get into season 20 and forward. Finally, as we always like to do, where were we when this episode aired? And I'm delighted to say that we're finally in the life cycle of Elwood City Limits. October 2016 is when this starts. And 2 months before that, we had our first episode of Elwood City Limits.
Wow. So now we can be on high alert for Elwood City Limits references. except if there would be any references, they would be referencing the episodes we recorded about season one, you know,
right
back in 2015. So we probably wouldn't be able to spot them even if there was any. I do wonder, though, if there's any of the, because, you know, one of the reasons we started Elwood City Limits is because of meme magic. Arthur was big in the news again because of the Arthur Fist meme.
Yes.
I wonder if you could see the kind of seeds of any of that in these current seasons.
That's a good point. Well, we'll have to keep our eyes peeled. And I will say, since this would have come out only a couple months after we got started, probably we should be on the alert for any Elwood City Limits references starting in, like, season 22. Because by that time, by August, they were probably already got everything in the can and it was ready to be released. But they were probably still working on seasons 22 and onwards. So that's when we'll keep our eyes open. But you never know. Maybe they were able to sneak something in. It's funny that we're here, I guess. I don't really have much more to say about it other than, like, I mean, you can go back to the very first episode of Elwood City Limits and kind of start from there. What else is there to say? Just that it's cool that we finally came full circle in a way. And now here we go. All of that preamble, it was really fun to research that. And now let's get into the first episode of season 20, Buster's Second Chance. But, so before we start talking about the actual episode, Lucas, let's talk about the way that the show looks, because you can see it immediately once it gets started. So I will say that I have a compliment and I have a drawback, let's say.
It's like you're a manager, Will. It's like you've gone to HR management training. Compliment sandwich, except this is an open-faced compliment sandwich.
Yes, exactly. I love that. I was like, I don't have two positive things to say, but open-faced compliment sandwich. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So what I like is that the new animation moves very smoothly. Now, you mentioned this earlier, Lucas. We get in the previous Flash seasons, we call them, we did sometimes have characters moving a bit stiffly in the frame, and you get that paper doll effect. Like, their joints are being moved, but the sense of movement is a little bit stiff. And I don't think we have that as much anymore. I think that the characters move around more similarly to when this was traditionally animated. And it makes sense for a tool like Toon Boom Harmony to be able to allow that. It seems that, like, this is allowing them to just exist in the world a little bit more naturally, and it helps me to get into the episode. The problem that I have, and let me put this disclaimer out there again. We do this all the time, but I just want to be clear. I do not have a background in animation. I do not purport to be an animation expert. And I say this knowing that I have no doubt that everybody, every animator on the show, worked really, really hard and are proud of their work, as they should be. This is just, as a viewer, what I am noticing. The character designs look really off to me somehow. and I have a hard time putting it into words, and I'm what exactly that means. And I'm hoping that in talking to you about it, Lucas, we'll be able to figure it out. I put down here, they look almost sketchier in a way, like a little bit less uniformly designed. You know, in the previous ones, it's like with let's again, the paper doll effect, you're at least moving around designs that are pretty uniform all the way through. Whereas I'm having such a hard time putting my finger on this. If there was just, I would find myself looking at the characters sometimes and it'd be like, oh, their head looks small, or in that position, their mouth looks weird.
They look off model, if you will.
Yes. Like, off model, and like, sometimes when you do off model in cartoons, you can lead to a lot of like really wild takes and like images that are appropriately like nuts. But
whenever
in
the
a good
Simpsons
way,
are looking directly at the camera is the classic example.
Yes, exactly. Like the in between frames and stuff like that. But when they would look off model, it'd be like, oh, this looks like wrong somehow. It reminded me a little bit of how they're in the two seasons before we got to the Flash years, and they started to use, they were still using traditional animation, but they were kind of cleaning it up with CG assisted tools.
Yeah.
And I remember then, yeah. And I remember then it was like the look of it was also a little bit off in a similar way. And I got to say, there were times when I was watching this where it looked like a really good Arthur fan animation that you would find on YouTube, as opposed to looking like Arthur. But Lucas, you—I mean, this is something that you're quite passionate about.
Yeah.
You kind of alluded to your feelings before, but what do you think of the way the show looks and moves now?
I too am going to preface this with, you know, we love Arthur. And at the end of the day, Arthur lives and dies primarily with the writing. You know, it's the writing that makes the show so strong and everlasting. And, you know, the animation is the animation. I'm not the best person to give kind of a measured take about this kind of stuff, because I really am kind of a purist. You know, if it was up to me, I would make it that you have to use the antiquated tools they use to do those painterly backgrounds and hand-done
right.
animation they did for the first three seasons, because that's, like, what I like. You know, I'm the guy that is weekly watching anime from 1993, because I don't like the way that anime from 2024 looks. You know, I'm a bit of a purist about this stuff, so it's not to say that you can't like it or that it can't be good. It's just really, really not my personal cup of tea.
Sure.
Luckily, as an animated sitcom, in a way, Arthur, it's the writing that's most important, and the animation is in service of the writing. Obviously, I love that first three seasons animation, and that's what I prefer, but you have to play the cards you are dealt. Personally, I can see this as a step down, even from the Flash season. Flash season? Oh my goodness,
yeah,
gracious.
Here you go.
Personally, I see this as a step down from the Flash season. I know that you said you find the animation more fluid, but I can't help but see the motion tweens. I know the difference between what it looks like when they animated every frame themselves, and I know the difference between when someone used motion tweens to say the arm starts here and it ends up there, and then the computer puts the frames in between.
Right.
And I can't help but see that, and I can't unsee it. We are very lucky, because judging by this one episode we watched, it does look better than something like F is for Family, which I think looks even worse, probably because they don't have the super strong character designs that Arthur can lean on.
Sure.
Right? We're kind of repurposing these classic characters from the 90s and animating them with this new software, where some of those more modern shows made by the same studio look even worse, and it's because they designed the characters to kind of look like a Family Guy or something, whereas Arthur is you know, it's trying to look like Arthur. So that is a feather in its cap. It could always be worse. But yeah, I'm basically, you know, getting all my harshness and meanness out now, because I don't suspect we're going to talk about this every week, because that would probably be hard for people to listen to. So I'll simply say that I see it as a step down. I don't really like it. But I do think that I was really surprised in the Flash era just how strong the writing continued to be. And so I am kind of taking solace in that and knowing that, you know, the animation's never going to be as good as 1998, but the writing sometimes can be. So I'm looking forward to that.
I think what's also important to remember is that we had a similar, maybe culture shock isn't the right word, but like
aversion.
we had a similar, like when we watched the first episode of the Flash, first Flash season, we were like, whoa, like it was such a lot to get used to. And this is close enough that it didn't feel as shocking, I don't think, but it did feel different. So we're going to give this time to adjust. And then by the time we get to the end of this season in our season recap, I'm sure that we'll be able to encapsulate our feelings as to what we like or don't like about this new style. I think I'll just say it's kind of a push. Like we've gotten something good, but then also something not so good. So I wanted to make time for us to talk about it there. And of course, we welcome you to let us know what you think as well, because this might be nostalgic for you. This may have been when you started watching Arthur versus us, the old people who started watching in the 90s. And that probably looks like, you know, Filmation cartoons by comparison. The episode we're talking about, Buster's Second Chance. Buster used to be Arthur's best friend, and we see these flashbacks to previous moments, and this is again drawing on the deep well of Arthur references that the writers of the show continue to enjoy putting in, and I like to see. So we actually see a little bit of a reanimating of a scene we got in the first season where little Buster meets little Arthur. The first time they met, Arthur was in the sandbox, and they literally say, hi, I'm Buster. My name's Arthur. Hi. Well, see ya. And then Arthur pours sand on himself, and then it's just like they were best friends. We also get, there's quite a few mentions in this episode of the Love Ducks, which is a episode from many, many seasons ago, and how that's something that they share together. So we get this little montage of all the ways in which they're friends, including there's a shot of like Buster in an alien mask and Arthur in a scuba suit playing checkers together. And so they were best friends until this week, .. The actual matter of this episode is that the Brain has won a statewide science competition, and his part in the competition was that he identified bacteria that was present in the local water fountains, which Buster is offended by because he always knew there was something up with the water fountains. We see a quick clip of Buster taking a taste of a public water fountain, and he says, definitely fish with just a hint of feet. So something weird's going on with that water. But the difference is that Buster never took the steps to prove what was going on there. He just always kind of knew.
He didn't gather the qualitative and quantitative data. did you see, by the way, there was recently an East Coast tap water. I saw this tweet floating around. Russell Crowe was saying his top three tap waters in the world. Number three being New York City, number two being Reykjavik, and number one being St. John's, Newfoundland.
Really? No, I didn't see that. What a boon for St. John's. I think our tap water is fine. The only other tap water I can really remember is nearby Cape Breton, which I remember being really salty when I was little. So that's about the most I can say. I've been Brita-ing it for many years now. We also have Buster telling us that as a little kid, he was taken to a brainy kids school, as he calls it, and he was given tests to determine how smart he was. The test being, it's given a marble, and then where do you put the marble? Do you put it in the jar with marbles or in the jar with something else? And Buster puts the marble up his nose. So, which is very shocking to like Arthur, who he's just like, you put it up your nose? And I'm like, I thought he was going to swallow it, to be real with you. Like, I thought he was just going to eat it.
Putting up his nose like he's Arnold in Total Recall is still pretty crazy. It's pretty odd. And I like the justification that Buster gives, that it was so obvious that the marble goes into the jar with the other marbles that he thought it was some sort of trick question. So him putting it up his nose was him playing 3D chess.
Right. So Buster, what he wants to do is he wants to go back in time so that he can go to the Brainy Kids school and be as smart as Brain, which will then allow him to be as well regarded as Brain. So Arthur and Brain tell him right away that time travel is impossible. So Buster goes for a third opinion, which is reading a comic book called Professor Timekeeper that explains the theory of time travel. Buster, I think he's like, so George is like the dyslexic character. He has dyslexia. But Buster, I think, has like, if not dyslexia, then at least just kind of generalized reading trouble, which is pretty consistent with the way that he's been treated throughout the series. And one thing I really liked here was when he's reading the comic book, he's reading it out loud to himself. And when they get into scientific terms, he'll just go like, it's like, as I told you, Professor Timekeeper, big word, big word, big word, big word. And he just skips over it that way. I thought that was really cute and also something believably childish that someone would do. Like, I'm pretty sure I used to do that when I would read comics or books that had like a lot of scientific jargon as a kid.
And that's how you learn new words is, you know, you infer via context clues.
So Buster falls asleep reading this comic, and in his dream, he is able to go back in time. He goes back in time, and not only does he put the marble in the correct jar, but he does like a little magic trick. He like takes the marble from behind the teacher's ear, and he says, I read it in a book. And then this leads to Buster growing up, where in the future, he's still in the third grade, so he takes AP classes in the morning before going to Lakewood Elementary, where he's not in third grade, he's in fourth grade, because he's got to skip the third grade. And his entire outfit is different. He's dressed in a white button-up shirt, he's got squared glasses, and everybody treats him like a genius. And in fact, he's got like a first place ribbon because it was him who won the science competition and not Brain. But the weird thing is, Arthur and his friends don't recognize him because he's not in their class anymore. He's not friends with them. And this takes an even more dramatic turn where Buster is walking outside the Sugar Bowl and it's completely in disrepair. And it seems to have been, they explicitly say it's been taken over by the Tough Customers. It's a Tough Customers only hangout. Binky and Rattles are hanging out outside of it, and Binky says, go make like an egg and scramble. And as they go inside, Binky and Rattles, Arthur enters, and then we find out Arthur is a Tough Customer in this universe.
So yes, Buster has, and I knew this was going to go this way, he's butterflied affected himself into a situation where Arthur has followed the wrong path in life.
It's funny that was your reference. For me, I was thinking of that reboot episode, Dot, the one with the funhouse, where Dot loses the game and then Enzo turns into like a bad dude and it's like mega frame instead of mainframe. So, but yours is a bit cleaner, the butterfly effect, although kids don't watch the butterfly effect. Like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to. So Arthur is known as Specs. He's got green tinted glasses. He's got cowboy boots and he wears a leather jacket and he's like super tough guy now. And he's hanging out with the Tough Customers. In fact, the Tough Customers are deferent to him. Binky gets him a soda. Buster goes over to Arthur's house. DW says, Arthur's not at home. He's with his dopey friends. To which Buster says, but I'm his dopey friend. There's a couple of good lines in this episode. Arthur and Buster end up meeting at the comic book shop. Arthur in this universe is very standoffish because he's a tough customer, doesn't have a lot of friends, but he does admit to wishing that he had a friend to do all kinds of uncool stuff with, like play checkers and read The Love Ducks with. I will say this is further explained why Arthur is a tough customer, because in this universe, Buster and Arthur did not make friends on the sandbox, and instead Binky made friends with Arthur in the sandbox. So he was like a tough customer from the age of 4 or 3. So he was doomed from the start. And Arthur seems to be really trapped in this role that doesn't suit him, where he is where he was just specs and he can't be as nerdy and uncool as he would want to be. Again, this is in Buster's dream, so nothing really comes of this. Buster ends up waking up and being thankful that he has the relationship with Arthur that he has. The episode ends with Arthur and Buster, they're deciding to go investigate the goat smell in Buster's locker. And, like, Buster's so happy to have Arthur back. They're going to go investigate the goat smell, but first they need to find out what a goat smells like. So they're going to go to the zoo. And Buster says, let's go smell some goats. And, nothing really comes of that whole future thing. Although, I do wonder if we'll ever see Specs again. Or if that's just a one-off. And now, a word from us kids.
And now, a word from us kids!
This is Megan and her first grade class. They're playing an imagination game where you make a question. It's like a Mad Lib or like a prompt sort of thing. So, what would blank be like if blank? So, like, what would your life be like if you lived under the sea? And then they make drawings out of it. I'm very pleased at this point in Arthur's production that with the Word From Us Kids segments, we're still doing the animations based on the kids' drawings. That's something that we did in like season one.
I wonder what tool they're using to make those animations, right? Because they have such a different look. Like, are they making those in Toon Boom animation? One would assume.
I can't imagine they wouldn't be, but it does. Those at least look consistent with the way they have always looked. So, I guess there's only so many ways to like truly animate children's drawings. So I just appreciate that still there. Sometimes we take a little bit of a step back and be like, you know, when in the earlier episodes, we're just like, oh, those kids are probably our age or older by now. And I did a little bit of mental math. So these kids who are in first grade here are probably still in junior high right now. Okay. So they're part
Gen
of like
Alpha.
Gen Alpha. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure their teachers are only going to get younger and younger, which depresses me a little bit. Not much to say about this one. It's just kind of using your imagination like Buster did.
My favorite hypothetical is the kid who says, imagine if his house was on Jupiter, which he says aliens would be coming to my house. And that's just weird.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a little girl who does like a really good old person walk that I appreciated as well.
Hi, everybody. It's Lucas, your favorite co-host from Elwood City Limits. I want to remind you folks that if you like listening to the podcast, first and foremost, the best way to spread the love is to tell a friend who is interested in Arthur or podcasts or animation or hearing about Nova Scotia for some reason. But there's some other things you could do as well. For instance, you can follow us on social media. Twitter is at ECL Podcast. The Instagram is at Elwood City Limits. My pet project, the Twitch channel, which we do live streams on sometimes, twitch.tv/ElwoodCityLimitsPod. And we also have a Facebook and Tumblr as well. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and youtube.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's where Will has been diligently uploading all of the episodes if they're not on your podcast listening service of choice. If they aren't on one of those services, let us know. You can reach out to us on social media or via email at elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com. Finally, the Patreon is where you can find all of our paywall content, patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. This gives you access to the Discord, where we have a bustling community, as well as some exclusive videos, audio bonuses, such as commentary for the various Arthur movies and more, as well as some of our additional podcasts. For the Kids is where me and Will cover all the PBS shows that aren't Arthur, as well as ECL Origins, where we really talk about any show from our childhood that we want. And most importantly, you get early access to every episode of ECL. You get to flex on your friends that you're getting it a week early. You can join for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. And now, back to the show.
And now, back to Arthur!
Second part of this episode is Arthur and the Whole Truth, which finds Arthur, who is practicing for, he's practicing piano because he's going to be doing a big recital. And he feels that not only is he not improving, he might actually be getting worse at the piece that he's trying to memorize and play. And his dad says that he sounds fine. But man, Arthur wishes that his mom and dad would just tell him the truth instead of being supportive, which is like, Arthur, check your privilege, my guy. At least you have like a mom and dad who are supportive, you know?
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? Now I understand. At least he's getting a monochrome of support.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what they say, Will? Hard times create hard individuals. So perhaps Arthur, it's about extremes, right? It's not just about having unsupportive parents or overly supportive parents. It's about parents that are going to tell you a little bit of constructive criticism when you need it. Because if you're surrounded by yes men, well, that's how you get a Kanye, Art Will. You know, I love Kanye, but he's surrounded by yes men. He could do with someone to tell him no every once in a while. And maybe that's perhaps what this Arthur episode is hearkening towards.
I mean, speaking of, you know, when this season of Arthur would have started, we were probably still talking about Kanye in 2016 or 2017.
Life of Pablo.
2017, excuse me, yeah, but in like a way different context than we do now. Oh my God, there's so many things that have changed in the last seven, nearly 8 years, including that, but I'm certain that Kanye's probably made his way into the episode description before. Arthur, we also see that Arthur's bedtime is 9 o'clock, which I just kind of thought was interesting. So yeah, Arthur wants his family to tell him the truth, which DW was happy to tell him the truth. In fact, she goes a little bit too far, like, you know, it's making sure that he flosses as well as brushes, just being like overly truthful to the point of like mean, which is her way. So the actual episode is that Arthur creates a diorama for a project for school. Did you note the description that he had of this? Because it's a cave family. And he says there's cave mommy, cave brother and sister, and cave daddy, which is a Lucas Mancini original term coined in the episode where they go to the bat caverns.
Oh my goodness gracious. We found it, Will. The first reference to Elwood City Limits. I don't care if it's a coincidence. We're taking credit.
See, I was just like, cave daddy? Oh my God. Like that's a title of one of our episodes. Yeah, Arthur's diorama is like something a little kid would make. It's not terribly good. Like it's okay, but it's, you know, it's not great. Buster says he thinks it looks great, while he has created a pretty impressive statue of a saber-toothed cat that he made out of marzipan, and that he is very excited to eat as soon as it is grated. I know that like marzipan is something, it is edible, you know, it's always like marzipan. Ugh. Have you ever had it before?
I like marzipan. People hate on it.
It tastes like
it's like almond candy. Like it tastes like like it's like chewy, like the way candy is before they invented good candy. but it's like an almond kind of flavor, I would describe it as. I'm actually in the minority. Me and my mom have this in common. I actually really like the taste of marzipan, but I know people don't like it.
I've just never had the opportunity to try it, but it's always, it's not in the realm of like Brussels sprouts or something, but it is one of those things where it's like, if you hear it on a cartoon, it's like, ew, gross. I'm like, all right, well, let me try it. You never know. Like, big cartoon was telling me how bad broccoli was for years, and broccoli is one of my favorite vegetables. So.
Yeah, I was going to say Brussels sprouts are fire.
Yeah, yeah, really good, especially if you make them right. So Arthur gets a pretty middling grade. He gets like a C+ on this project, which surprises him because he worked very hard on it and Buster complimented it, to which Francine says that Buster will only tell Arthur what he wants to hear. We see an example of this where they are at a baseball game and Arthur doesn't do so well. And Buster's like, yeah, no, don't worry. Like you're good. You're doing great. Now, I'm just going to point this out. I apologize that this has already been established, but we see here with the baseball uniforms, it used to be that they wore those like yellow and orange you know, hats and shirts. Now they have the green Greebs. Like, they have a little Greeb on the left breast, and the team are specifically the Greebs. So also going along with the Elwood City team. I don't know if that's been there for longer than right now, but I just wanted to note it here in case it hasn't been. So Arthur is concerned that Buster is telling him just what he wants to hear. He has this imaginary sequence where he's thinking of him and Buster in caveman times. Right? Arthur is a hunter-gatherer, and Buster is creating cave paintings. And Arthur creates a spear that is made out of a stick and like a rounded rock. So it's like not all that good. But Buster caveman Buster compliments him and says that it's good. And Arthur tries to go out and use it. It's too heavy. And he ends up getting chased by a woolly mammoth back into their cave and then presumably killed because the woolly mammoth corners both him and Buster. So, yeah, I guess that's how hard times, Daddy. That's how it was back then.
I liked the creativity of this. And I do like, you know, they had to make all original character designs to commit. You know, they had to animate that woolly mammoth. So it's not totally kind of static, like you would expect with kind of the newer animation art style. We're still getting imagination sequences. They still have the capacity for imagination sequences. And this made me laugh. I don't know. Caveman stuff's funny.
I don't know. I'm never that into caveman stuff, but I'm glad it made you laugh. I'm glad it works for somebody. So Arthur's plan to kind of catch Buster in this behavior is that he's going to wear this hideously gaudy shirt to catch him in a lie. So he wears it to the Brains Mom's ice cream shop where he meets Buster, and he reveals it. Now, this is something that Arthur sets up in the previous scene. He says that his Uncle Fred got him a shirt when he went to Las Vegas. And this shirt, it's got a pink for the background and
almost a salmon.
Yes, and it's multicolored. The predominant color is neon green, and it's depicting a casino and hotel in Las Vegas. And it's super gaudy because apparently Uncle Fred is colorblind, and that's the Uncle Fred from Arthur's Perfect Christmas. And yeah, it's very loud. I wouldn't say it's, you know, exactly pleasing, but
Will, I gotta take issue with this. I gotta call it like I see it, Will. This shirt, okay, let's say that Uncle Fred bought this shirt at the Tex Hotel as a novelty kind of Tex Hotel gift shop, because that's what the shirt is displaying.
Yeah.
This shirt, if this is legitimate all over print, okay, it's a Ringer tee all over print, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's like over 12 different colors on this shirt. And if you know anything about t-shirt screen printing, okay, let me just say, I would go as far as to say, Will, this is drip. Not only is it drip, if Arthur was to throw this thing on Grailed, on Depop, okay, and we can't assume it's vintage. We don't know when the uncle bought this shirt. Okay.
Right.
If it's from the 90s and it's single stitch, this thing's going for like $300. Okay.
Now, he did say that he had to get it from the attic. So
that's what I'm saying. If this is single stitch, if it's from the 90s, this is at starting price $120, and the ceiling, the sky is the limit. We could go up to $400 with this thing. Okay. I've looked at, you know, everybody wants those all over print NASCAR shirts, Will. I don't know if you've been to any of these kind of resale these clothes. They're not thrift stores, but they take used clothing and they resell it at a premium because it's curated thrift. But they're paying a pretty penny for all over NASCAR t-shirts, you know. And if you got an all over, you know, a giant The Rock shirt or something, like vintage wrestling shirts, forget about it. Okay, those things, I'm sure you know, Will, if you look at eBay for vintage wrestling shirts, they're all $500. So I have a feeling if Arthur holds on to this thing and keeps it in good condition, he could turn a pretty profit on the old Tex Hotel tee. But even besides all of that, I'd say it's kind of drip. I don't know. I'm a fan.
This is where I feel very out of my element because, I mean, and this has been consistent for the past, as long as we've been around. Ever since I've known you, Lucas, you've been very fashion conscious. And so that is another big difference between the two of us, is that I couldn't care less about keeping up with trends. So I kind of know what you're talking about with the vintage stuff, but it is certainly very gaudy, I will say. That's the word that sprung to mind when I was like, how do I describe this? And, you know, probably would hurt to look at after a while. And the reaction from everybody in the ice cream shop is everybody screams. couple lines here. So there's a mother with a child who says, "Sweet Jackson Pollock." And Lucas, this came out in 2016. We get an actual check, please.
That's crazy. Yes. I hope we're still getting check, please, until the day I die. I hope I'm going to be 80 and there's going to be sitcoms with a guy going, "Check, please. I'll have what she's having."
Right. Buster, obviously hates it. Like, he reacts to it very negatively. But then he finds, a very mildly nice thing to say about it. Then Arthur catches him in this lie. And he storms outside. Buster stops him. He says that normally he's this agreeable because he hates fighting and he doesn't want to cause any disagreement by saying how he really feels. But Arthur encourages him that he can tell him anything and that having his own opinion is not, you know, an attack. It's not starting an argument. It's just how he feels. So Buster is immediately more honest with Arthur. So Arthur invites him back to his place to play the Curse of the Moomies video game, which we've seen before. And Buster's like, "Nah, I don't really want to play that game. I actually don't really like that game." This is another evidence of where Arthur is right now, which is by which I mean 2016. He's like, "I downloaded the new level for Curse of the Moomies." And we've seen him play Curse of the Moomies before on a Shmoney Shmay station. So now Arthur's probably got a Shmi S3 or something. And so you're able to download new levels for this game. This is a new era of gaming we've entered into.
They've even ruined video games in Arthur, Will. They're going to nickel and dime us. For soon, Curse of the Moomies, it's going to be microtransactions. You're going to have to buy new skins for your Moomie. You know, you're going to have to grind for Moomie tokens, Moomie V-Bucks.
You're going to get +2 Moomie poison resistance in your new gear. Yeah, sucks. It's unfortunate. He also goes over to Arthur's house the next day and he gives back a Scare Your Pants Off book. I feel like we haven't had a Scare Your Pants Off book in quite a while. He gives him back the book. It's called The Gourmet Ghost, and he disagrees with Arthur on the ending. Arthur liked everything except the ending, but Buster really did like the ending. And Arthur's like, "Oh, okay, well, maybe I would have to read it again. I don't know." This leads up to Arthur's recital. By the way, the piece that Arthur is practicing on the piano is The Entertainer, which you've probably heard before. The da-na-na-na, da-na-na, da-na-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So he does pretty well at his recital. He manages to get all the way through it. It's, appropriately a little halting for an 8-year-old kid. And everybody has nice things to say afterwards. Buster gives a very mild critique. He says that, you had a couple of mistakes in the beginning, but then after that, it was all fine. And then Arthur takes this as an attack. He takes this entirely the wrong way. And he storms away because he thinks that, why would you ever say something like that to me? But on the drive home, DW agrees with Buster's critique. Again, whenever we talk to her in this episode, she's very, very honest. And Arthur realizes that maybe he was a little bit too quick to judge Buster there. So the end of the episode is that he goes to Buster's house to apologize. And Buster is also apologetic. But so Arthur realizes that he was in the wrong there. And Buster made Arthur an edible piano out of marzipan, which Arthur tries. And he gets a comical reaction to eating the marzipan, which, again, I'd like to try some marzipan. I wonder where I can find it. I wonder how much it goes for. Just a little bit. You never know. Season 20. We have well and truly begun. We had quite a lot to say before the episode. Now, let's talk about what we thought about that episode. So, Lucas, we started with Buster's second chance. It's a Buster heavy episode this week. What did you think of Buster's Second Chance?
Buster's Second Chance, you know, it did blow my socks off, but it was fairly entertaining. The best stuff by far actually has nothing to do with Buster at all. You would think, oh, this alternate reality where Buster's this smarty pants, this Poindexter, that's the interesting stuff. Not really. The best is seeing tough customer Arthur. You know, I'd watch a whole episode, a whole alternate universe, you know, Marvel What If, with Arthur as a tough customer. Very interesting idea that I'd never considered before. Leather jacket, sunglass donning Arthur, who has no time for kiddie stuff like the Love Ducks. By far the most interesting portion of the episode, but we don't really get into that until the final third. But I don't know. Thinking back on it, there was some stuff that really caught my attention. I don't want to use the term interesting again. It's a food for thought with the moral. You know, it's kind of a nature versus nurture meditation. Would Buster have actually been smarter if people had been telling him he was smarter his whole life? This is a very real kind of thing that people have explored. I remember there was a study where there was like certain kids were told they were gifted and certain kids were told they weren't. And the kids that were told they were gifted ended up doing better in life years later. But in reality, there was actually no criteria. They were just kind of telling certain groups that they were gifted and some that they weren't. So there's something to this about, you know, Buster thinks this one moment ruined his whole life. And so it's an interesting idea for Arthur, of all things, to be exploring. But like I said, the thing that ends up being most interesting is alternate universe Arthur. That being said, it's not like one of my favorite episodes ever or anything like that. It's more so kind of intriguing. What did you think, Will?
Intriguing is a good way to put it, because I think it brings up some interesting like what if scenarios, which are always fun, especially in as long lived a cartoon as this one. I just kind of wish they spent a bit more time on it, or is a bit more fleshed out, you know? I agree. I also liked tough customer Arthur. I liked the sense of logic for it, of like, not so much, you know, in the just Arthur's a tough customer in this universe just because. It's like, no, because Binky is his best friend. And that leads into basically Binky being essentially his number two. And they don't really seem to be friends. It's more that just he is tougher than Binky for some reason. And like Buster being a smarty pants, like there's some interesting stuff that we pepper in there. But I was just like, I want to know more. I know it's just a dream. But still, like, they had me interested enough that I wish it was more of the episode. Because other than that, I'm kind of mild on it. Like, it's fine. Like, I don't, you know, love it or hate it or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, everything that I was interested in didn't get enough time. But there was a fair amount of funny lines and references back to classic Arthur. So there is that. I'm also a little bit mild on Arthur and the Whole Truth. I think I liked it a little bit better than the first part, but it's because it's an interesting scenario to talk about either, let's just say, loved ones wishing they were a bit more honest with you instead of being nice, and then how that can not be so great. Although I think there was more to it. This is another case where I think that the ending felt a bit rushed, where I wish we could have gotten to Arthur's overreaction to Buster's honest critique a little bit quicker, so that we could draw out the end part a little bit, because Arthur kind of realized his mistake a little bit too fast. And I would have liked to see like him really stewing in it. And it wasn't really about learning a lesson. It was more about them having fun with Buster being kind of a yes man, and then going back on that. I don't know. I just feel like a little bit more could have been done with the specific parts of like, to show me a little bit more of Buster being brutally honest, or show me a little bit more of him being, well, they showed enough of him being a yes man. But yeah, I think the brutally honest part would have been a little bit more interesting if we'd gotten maybe just a little bit more of it. But it's fine. There's some imaginative parts, like the caveman part. I think that's a good point you made about, It's a return to one of those classic Arthur fantasies. Some good lines that I genuinely did laugh at. So I did like it a bit more than the first story. But still a little bit like kind of cool on it, I guess.
I agree. I like this one a little bit less than Buster's Second Chance, and it's mostly because I feel like in the third act, it does kind of fizzle out. Like, it doesn't really reach this apex where they find middle ground with don't be too critical, don't be overly critical. I feel like we get out of the episode just as quickly as we're starting to introduce the moral, and it does really leave you with a shrug. That being said, the strength of the episode is that it is quite funny. I did really like the caveman stuff. But didn't leave as much of a lasting impression, and didn't leave as much, like I said, food for thought as Buster's Second Chance.
So yeah, I who's to say if this is going to be indicative of the season ahead of us or the era ahead of us, but I have hope. We've done this. This is the 20th time that we're starting an Arthur season, and there's definitely been ones that we've liked that have started off a little bit mildly, so hardly an indicator of what's to come. And speaking of what's to come, well, we're into it now. We've got a whole new Arthur season ready for us to discover, and we're very excited to do so. Now, I will say that we are coming up into March, as one of those emails said, which means that we are going to be having a brand new Patreon podcast at the end of March, and we're going back to For the Kids. And now that we're outside of the PBS banner, or at least we're stepping outside of it a little bit, so, you know, still thinking about a couple of PBS Kids shows, I think it's definitely time to tackle some heavy hitters of the kids' world. And this is one that has been requested for quite a bit of time. So, Lucas, the end of March, you and I are going to be talking about, well, actually, let me, instead of telling you, let me ask you, Lucas, can we fix it?
I'm going to be the kind of dark and twisted evil kid and say, well, no, we can't.
Oh,
that's right. I was a real big rebel at 7 years old.
Well, I guess we're going to find out whether we can or not, because we're going to be talking about Bob the Builder. So look out for that at the end of March, patrons. And of course, if you're on the free feed, you will get a preview of that too. And don't forget, we've got our episode on The Amazing World of Gumball, really fun, available for patrons now. You can subscribe at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. Coming up on the next episode of Elwood City Limits, we continue our foray into season 20 with Fern's Flights of Fancy and Cereal. Name of the episode is Cereal.
Oh my god, is someone going to get murdered on Arthur?
You're closer than you think.
What? Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, we continue to move into the modern world, more and more into the modern world with Arthur, the closer we get to the end of it. So yeah, I'm really interested to be talking about this. And yeah, for the 20th time, Lucas, the new Arthur season has begun. A new IRL season is going to begin soon. And I'm just happy that we are not only looking back on our own history with the podcast, but we're also looking forward to continuing on with the show. Well, that's it for Elwood City Limits for this week. My name is Will Young, and for Lucas Mancini,
you look so happy. Me no want you feel like doofus.
Okay, that was not my guess for what I thought you were going to do, but continue to keep me on my toes. We'll see you next time.